नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। Okay, I'm going to set my mic to always on. Okay, so welcome to our study of Pali. Today we're starting on page 5. Text in the chat. Okay, so on page 5 we have a little bit of recap here, but we have this chart of Ekavachana Bahuvachana. It has the numbers down the side: Pathama, Dutiya, Tatiya, Chatuthi, Panchami, Chathi, and Satami, and then Alapana. First, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and vocative. Ekavachana, Eka means one, Vachana means speech, so it's speech about one. Bahuvachana, Bahu means many. Speech, so it means speech about many. So when we talk about vachana, speech, we're referring in the grammar, when we talk about vachana, we mean either plural, singular or plural. So this chart is used to conjugate, or we say decline, the word declension and decline. Talking about the endings, we're changing the endings of the words. Decline refers to any type of noun, let's say. To decline, nominal, nama, we call them. So nouns, adjectives, anything that fits under the first of the three types of words. Remember, there are three types of words. There's nominal, nouns type, verb type, and then there's the indeclinables, the ones that don't ever change. So the noun type of words are declined using this chart. Verb type are declined in a different way. We'll get into later on in the course. Similar, but it's a different chart, easier sort of chart. Okay, so what this means is you take any noun, if you scroll back up to page, scroll down in this page, see these 13 different words under the regular category, Buddha, Muni, Seti, Garu, Vinyu, etc. And you put that, you plug that word into this chart, give you 16 different, same, but 16 separate forms of the word. Each word can be plugged into this chart. Now, most words fall under a similar pattern. They follow along with words of the similar type. This type is based on their gender and the letter with which they end. There are six different vowels that nama can end in: a, a, I, e, u, and u. They can't, the stem word can't end in a or o, the other two vowels, and words don't ever end in, regular words don't ever end in consonants. Apart from these regular ones, there are irregular nouns, irregular nama, which follow their own pattern but still fit into this chart. They just, their endings don't follow any other. So if we scroll down to page 6, you'll see the first chart. You want to understand what this actually means, these charts, I'll have to find someone who can turn these into actual tables someday. But what this means is you add O on the end. Technically, you turn the A into O, right? Because it was Purisa. So you don't just add O, but basically the understanding is the ending for Ekavachana, Patamavipati Ekavachana is O. So what that means is 1-1. Remember last time I gave you this system that we have. If you scroll up to page 4, talk about the system. The 1-1, 1-2, 2-1, 2-2, 3-1, etc. That's how I propose we talk about these different forms, especially when we get into looking at texts. In fact, that's something I'd like to do today, if possible. Maybe I'll copy and paste to another document, and at the end of the class, take you all over there, and we can look at a text together. Because that was really useful when I was teaching in person. Useful to take people through a text, because so much more real then, and so many different things to but yeah, so when we do that, I'll be using this system. So the 1-1 form is O. That means any of these ones below, if you look at the list on page 6, below Purisa, all of these other ones are going to end in the same. So you're going to get Acharyo. No, you don't. Yes, you do. Acharyo. Kumaro, Katiyo, Gano, Doro, Mo, Urago, and so on. This simplifies things. It's not to say that Pali is in any way simple, but that in and of itself is God. Purisang means you add M, ang on the end, anigahita. And so on. So you should be able to see the changes here. I'm not going to go through them all. I'll go through them all, but I'm not going to type it all in. Purisena means Purisa becomes ena. The a becomes ena. Here it becomes asa, 4-4-1 becomes asa, 5-1 becomes asma or a, 6 again becomes asa, and this is where you start to see that they're not actually all different. 4-1, 6-1 are the same. You look over at 4-2, 6-2, also the same. Now that is pretty much across the board. You'll see a few. Funny, I didn't put them all down because this is not it. Purisasa, Purisaya. We're here. Please, someone tell me if you've got the time to turn these into real charts, because that would make it. Okay, so Purisasa or Purisaya or Purisatang, all three of those work. So it's a little bit different, but by and large, Asa, you're going to see Asa. Anything that ends in Asa is an immediate giveaway, because this form here, the 6-1 form, is the most common besides the first two. Obviously, the object and subject-object ones, 1 and 2 forms, are the most common. You need subjects and objects in most sentences. But beyond that, the asa is most common. And it's usually 6-1. 4-1 is much less common. makes it easy when we're trying to translate. We can assume default is 6-1. So when you get these ones are the same, well, assume 6-1 first, and then worry about the context. If the context requires 4-1 or 4-2, then you decide. If you look at 3-2 and 5-2, also the same. 3-2 is probably much more common. 5, the fifth form, the ablative, is not that common. This is just sort of practically speaking. Obviously, technically, you have to go through them all, but practically speaking, cut corners and assume that it's probably the instrumental, the satya, third form. Okay, and so just to reiterate what I'd already talked about, and just to make it clear, each of these has a different meaning. So the first one, Patama Vipati, is the subject of a sentence, so it means the man. The second one also means the man or a man, but it now is only used as the object of the sentence. So if you give something, not if you give, if you go to someone, you go to the man, that you is the subject, the man is the object, right? Purisena means with or by the man. So anytime you want to say you went with someone, or something was given by someone, or something was done by someone, which is very common. Passive sentences are much more common in Pali than in English. Often things are done by people. By people, or had by people, or made, or so on. Gone. It is gone by him is a very common construct, you know, that kind of thing. One even dena buyate, which means by him it has existed. Dena buyate translated meaning is he exists, he or she exists, but it literally means by him it is existed, and it's a special type of sentence called a bhavavajika, which means it's just a form. Into existence, there's no subject or object in the sentence. Dena buyate is a special form. So for dena means by him. So again, you have the ena on the end. Very easy to pick out. For is dative, so it has to do with giving. If you give something, I give the gift to the man. Here, to the man is when we purisasa. Often purisaya, just for ease, to separate it, to make it clear that it's not a 6-1 form. Purisaya would be used quite often just to remind you that it's a 4-1, or make it clear that it's a 4-1. Purisasma, from, again, from has to do with fear, so if you're afraid of something, but if you come from somewhere, I come from Varanasi, then you use asma. Or ah, and that's problematic because purisa is also used for bahu. And in certain cases, this is where gender is important, because a lot of the purisa is obviously masculine, but a lot of these are not. So if you come up with bhavaka, if you have the form bhavaka, and you, even though you know bhavaka means fire, which probably don't anyway, but if you did, bhavaka means fire, you still can't remember if it was masculine or feminine. So if you see bhavaka, you might think it's a plural form, you might think it's a feminine form. You could be just talking about the fire, not from the fire. So this is where theoretically gender is important. Obviously, in most cases, the context will clear it up for you, but often you'll just forget and you'll think, Pavaka, what form could that possibly be? And you don't recognize it as a 5-1 form, because Purisasma is the obvious, you know, the one that you remember as being 5-1. Purisa does happen, and it is something you have to remember, but it's much easier. It's one that's going to slip, that slips people up, as it's used elsewhere. Long A form, feminine. Right away you think feminine form. Either that or plural. Again, purisasa is genitive. Now, a genitive is easy to recognize because it always comes before the thing that is possessed. I think I mentioned this last time, but if you're talking about the belonging of someone, something that belongs to someone, like the man's car, the man's home. You know? You put man first and then home. So purisasa geha. Geha meaning home. Home of the man, the man's home. Purisasa geha. Gehang is home of the man. So this is one way of helping to tell the difference between four and six. Six will always come right before the thing that is being possessed. Seven is locative, meaning having to do with location. It also is used to talk when you're talking about someone in regards to. I often come across this in regards to. In regards to the Abhidhamma, there is much to learn or something like that. In regards to work we have to do, in regards to Nibbana, many things can be said about it or something. And the seventh, the eighth, the alapana is when you call someone, "Hey, man." This is easy to recognize. It's one of the only one that has this short A on the end. So your job here is to memorize this, and the easiest way is to use purisa. Something like purisa as a base. Puriso, purisa, purisang, purise, purisena, purisehi, purisasa, purisaya, purisathang, purisanang, purisasma. Purisa, purisehi, purisasa, purisanang, purisasming, purisamhi, purisehi, purisesu, purisa, purisa. Memorize that. The way I did it when I was learning Sanskrit was actually just to write down the endings. Write it down again and again and again and again. Don't write out the whole word, that takes too long. You write down this chart, write out a chart, put the numbers down, 1, 2, and 1 to 7 in the alapana. Then just put the endings. O, a, ang, e, ena, ehi, asa, aya, atang, anang, asma, a, ehi, asa, anang, asming, amhi, e, esu, a. And I would just write it again because what our Sanskrit professor was awesome. He'd give us pop quizzes like every other day. Every week we had at least one pop quiz. And it forced you to study. He would give us this conjugation and say, okay, next class there's going to be a pop quiz. And that would count towards our final marks. So we were constantly, or I was anyway, constantly on the bus, I would write these things down. If you really want to learn Pali, this is one of the most important things for you to do, is to memorize these paradigms. They're called paradigms. And there's 13 of them. You have to memorize all of them. Scroll back up to page 5 and you've got the 13 here. Buddha, Muni, Seti, Garu, Vinyu, Kanya, Rati, Nari, Raju, Vadu, Kula, Aki, Vatu. 13. Many of them are similar. In fact, the neuter ones are almost the same as the masculine corresponding ones. First two forms that are different. Most of the feminine ones are very similar to each other. You'll definitely see patterns. Probably it's my job to go through them with you, but I'm not going to do that. If we were in person, I probably would. I should. Is it worth everyone's while for me to go through these?
It'd might help, yeah.
I think so too.
Thinking we weren't going to have. Okay, so the next one is Patti. My example is Muni. I'm not sure why I'm using Patti here. Never mind, it's Patti. Patti means Lord. Again, masculine. And again, it's a similar form, except the E doesn't change to O. And Patti is just the 1-1 form. And then you have this curious Ayo. Common. Among the masculine, the A form is unique. So Purisa, which we just went, what we just went through, is different from the other four. The next four are going to be fairly similar. They take a similar pattern. So again, we have this ang on the end here. We have the long ones here. Common and having this ayo sort of form, you'll see in the rest of them. Now, if you look at, we didn't do sandhi, which normally I would do first. But in this, I think this is the way he wrote this down, because I didn't put this text together. I think he mixed up his notes and he put sandhi after this, which is fine because we're only doing words and sandhi is about combining words. But one thing I usually go through in sandhi is the relationship between letters. And the only rule that you have to remember here, something you should maybe write down and at very least keep in mind, is that the letter E, which is in English the letter I, the Pali, this E here is related to the letter Ya. The I and the Y are related. And that's important because you're gonna see that. If you see Patayo, because of the Y, it's easy to remember that this was originally Patti. Because E and Y are related. In the same way, U and Wa are related. U meaning me being the letter U, Wa being the letter V. W it should be, but it's a V. So we're going to see Bhikkhu, or we're going to be using Garu, whichever one we're using. Garu will be Garawo. Garayo, it'll be Garawo. So instead of the Ya, it'll be a Va. Garawo. And when you see Garawo, you can recognize it came from Garu, as Wa and O and O and U are related. That's why this is here. I mean, it's not quite evident, but once you know the pattern, then it's evident. Remember, Aya, that should be Patti.
This is so hard.
Oh, yeah, Pali. No one ever accused Pali of being too easy. Okay, then there's the Na here. Patina, and that's going to be common with all of them. Setina, all of them are na endings. Again, we have Isa. So as I said, the SSA is flag that tells you it's a 6-1 or a 4-1. On the other hand, here we have Inang, Patinang. Remember in Purisa, we had Purisanang. So here we have Inang. And this is what you're going to see across the board. Whatever the vowel ends in, whether it's long or short, it becomes long, and you add nang on the end. So purisa nang, purisa becomes purisa nang, pati becomes pati nang. If it's already long, well, it just stays long. But it is common for people to get this form, the 4-1-6-1 form, the 4-2-6-2 form, mixed up with the 2-1 form, right? You see pati nang, and because ang is the form for the object. You think it was patina. Patina, that just became, is being used as the object. If you didn't realize it's from pati, this happens. remember that nang is often comes from patin. The heat on the end is always a flag that should remind you it's 5-2 or 3-2, 3-2, 5-2. Of course, it would all be easier if you were actually memorizing, and I hope some of you will actually take the initiative and memorize these. But this Ming, Ming is classic 7-1 form. So anytime you see Ming, there's very little question where that, what form that is. And Su is iconic as well. Pati Su, Patu Su, Guru Su, Garu Su. Again, we have a strengthening here. E becomes E. There's another thing I go over in Sandhi. The strengthening of vowels. So E and E is interchangeable. Many, many places E is, or the short vowel, whatever it is strengthened. And pati, patayopati, the A2 form almost always, if not always, follows the 1-2 form. So they're always going to be the same. A1 is often the same as 1-1, except in certain specific cases. I don't think we have patni in Pali. I think that word ever, or even a form of that word ever transferred over. I'm not sure, but it seems to me that we don't even. Yuvati doesn't actually mean wife. Yuvati means young girl. Oh, wait. Yuva, Yuvati. Yeah, no, young woman. Unmarried woman. Interesting that in Sanskrit, in Sinhala, it means wife. That's funny, because Yuvati is actually unmarried. Yuva means unmarried man, and Yuvati means unmarried woman. Again, I don't recognize that. That's probably Sanskrit. Bharya is wife. Bharya means one who carries the burden, I think. Bharya, or one who is a burden, I'm not sure. Wives are such burdens. Not that I would know.
That's kind of strange how they describe women would be a burden.
Not really. Sanskrit, Hindu society is quite prejudiced, always has been quite prejudiced against women. Thing.
Can you summon someone who belongs to you?
Yeah, that's, I think, the sense that Bharya is. Okay, no, I think I'm going to stop there because the other ones are very similar. I don't want to waste too much time and give everyone headaches going through the naughty details. You can, you know, go through these. At the very least, go through all the forms. Speak them out loud if you can. Get a sense of their differences. Look through the feminine, see how they are similar. But do it yourself. I want to get on to actually doing some translating here. And then you got all these irregulars that you have to go through. Leave it completely up to you. That can all be self-study. And next class, I think we'll get into the pronouns. Explain them.
That's going to be hard.
The pronouns, there's not much to talk about. And,
okay.
Or maybe I can do that now, actually, because there's not much to say. Let's just get into pronouns. Skip down to page 17. Make it 18, so bear with me. Page 18. Page 18. Gunanama, here again you see this paradigm. And all that we have to point out is... Sorry, what, this is not Gunanama. What am I saying? Sabanama. These are pronouns, Sabanama. So all we... All we have to, right, but I do have to talk about Gunanama. Okay, cancel that. Gunanama, I don't think is there's anything in here about them. All we have to say about Gunanama, it would be nice if somewhere in here I had a list of them, but Gunanama are adjectives. So big, small, short, tall, all these things are Gunanama. And a Gunanama almost always... now Gunanama has its own vowel ending. And so it follows the nama that it modifies in terms of conjugation.
That makes it easier.
But not in terms of the vowel ending. So suppose you have an adjective that ends in an a, which is most common. But then you have a noun that ends in a e, uni. So if the muni is 1-1 form, so it's the subject of the sentence, then you have an adjective like kusala, meaning skilled or wholesome. Say kusala. Or let's say papa. Huh? Papa. Papa Samanera, this is a... No, it's not working. Right, we're doing Muni, right. Okay. Kusala Muni, let's say. A Muni who is wholesome or who is skilled, let's say. Skilled. Skilled in something. Then we have... The Kusala becomes Kusalo. And the Muni stays as Muni. So they go according to their paradigm based on the last letter of the word, but the adjective follows in terms of conjugation. That's about all we have to say about Gunanama. I think that's fairly clear. It just follows along, but doesn't change its vowel, which actually makes it sometimes hard to recognize. It's hard to recognize that this word following this word, because they can have totally different endings based on the vowel that they originally came from. So it makes it easy, but not quite as easy as you would think, not in all cases. Okay, getting back to sabbanama, moving on to sabbanama. Sabbanama are pronouns. The first one is da. That means he, she, or it, or that. So again, there are two types of sabbanama. There's the ones that replace a nama. So instead of saying purisa all the time, you say he. Purisa went here, the purisa went there, but then you get tired of that, and so you just say he went. Everyone knows what you're referring to. Replace it with he. He is da. So you would say so. These ones with the star here are neuter. He's just put them in the same chart. So those don't apply for masculine. Those are ones for neuter. So this is, if you're talking about a thing, it, dung. Because neuter actually do, for the most part, follow. Only differs in these three instances. You'll see that with the nama above. And again, we have the feminine means he, it means she. And the other type of sabbanama are where they are used in conjunction. So that man, that woman, that thing. Again, it's the same form here. Still going to be da. Da is still the word that you use. Just don't replace the word with it. So you actually would have so puriso. See, so puriso, it means that man. So. So instead of puriso, so puriso. That's the third person sabbanama, or in Pali we would say the first person, but in English we understand that to be third person, meaning second person pronoun. You, when you're talking to someone, it's usually used in dialogue. When the Buddha says to Ananda, you, he says tuang, or it's tumha. Tumha is and it's masculine, feminine, and neuter, it's all the same. Talking to someone else, you don't have different forms for masculine, feminine, and neuter. And again, we have a paradigm. And one thing to notice is the word wo, the common replacement for the plural. You'll see that quite often. And de, common replacement for the singular. Forms where it's used, and it's used quite often for those forms. De here is a bit of a problem because de is also used in the third person pronoun above, right? De is used as a plural form. That can be a source of confusion until you understand the context of the sentence. And finally, we have the first person pronoun, amha. Covers all genders. I, it's referring to me, I, no, me, I, mine, all that. And again, no is very common in the plural replacement. A, fairly common, is very common. Singular replacement. That's it. Your job is to memorize all this stuff. When you learn Pali in Thailand, you have to memorize all those paradigms. I mean, you learn Pali anywhere. the 13 regular paradigms, 10 or so, 11. Irregular paradigms. Five Sambhanama paradigms.
So with Amma, this is I, but the ba, I'm sorry, the second one, that would be we.
Mayang? Young is we. Mayang and no. Bahu again is plural. We have aham, mayang. Ang is I, subject of the sentence. Mayang is we, subject of the sentence.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about these paradigms is you've got it all right here. You want to know what means by me? By me is maya or me. Of me or my? My is maya. Interesting how my and maya are, and me, you know? Comparison, or the similarities are still apparent in English. And that's not by chance. That's because these languages are distantly related. Yeah, I know some of it might be by chance, but a lot of it's not. Okay, I would like to take you through a passage, if possible. We got two choices here. We could go through a commentarial passage, which is going to be easier, because the commentaries were actually written down, and these were scholars who wrote in a much more strict sort of non-colloquial fashion. And then you have the Tipitaka, which is going to be less strict, more colloquial, more difficult, but is obviously much nicer to study. So Warder, in his book on Pali, used the Digha Nikaya. Nice, but probably pretty tough. Highland, they use the commentary to the Dhammapada. Much easier. But it's not actually the Buddha's teaching. It's not actually words of the Buddha. It's just stories about the Buddha. Which would you guys prefer?
Commentary sounds good to me.
Yeah, stories sounds nice.
Stories, yeah. Ease our aching brains, right?
I think Whichever you think would be more beneficial.
I suppose the commentaries are more beneficial because they're more structured. And at this point, anyway, they're just much easier. You're just going to get confused by the Tipitaka. But one thing about the Tipitaka is it's just full of traps, so it's neat to... grammatical traps, so it's neat to point them out and...
Sounds like something great to work up to.
Yeah. I remember showing it to people, beginners. It wasn't that bad. Okay, so let's start with... Actually, you know what we could do? I think I've already got this on the internet. Why don't we use the workbook? In fact, this is what I should get you guys all to do. Some of you may have already seen this, but this is awesome. This is something I should have given you from the very beginning. Okay. Open this up in a PDF reader. I've just given you a link there. Open it up in your web browser, probably. This I put together based on And it's the workbook is in several chapters, several parts, and each part is organized into sections.
Jakubala.
So the problem with this is going to be that if I can... The problem with this is going to be that I can't highlight stuff for you. Anyway, not that big of a deal. Yeah, I'm going back and forth. Okay, well, that's what I'll do. I'll give you this. Probably copy and paste it. Let's see. Problem with PDFs, of course. Actually, I should have the doc file somewhere. It's here on my... It's not on this computer. Try and copy and paste.
You can convert the PDF to the online
computer. I think even Google Docs will do it.
But it is in the static in Word.
It is? Ah, yeah. Where do you see it in static?
It's in the poly. In the poly folder?
Yeah.
Chakopala poly.doc.
Version and process. We're going to get. So, right. And switch over to this doc. There's the link I put in the Mumble chat. Page 4, part 1. You guys see all those spell check errors?
I don't know.
Okay, good. Fine, because I've got lots and lots of spell check errors. Yeah. Okay. So it's in three, each part is in three sections. The first section is the original Pali. Second section is a literal, full translation. And the third section is a word by word translation.
No pamangkama dhamma manosita. Manomaya. That's the page.
That's the page. So the way you ideally do this is you use the Pali. This is once you know enough Pali. You take the Pali and you try to translate it. Forget about the verse because that's too difficult. You don't translate the verses to start off. Start with Ayang, page 4.
Mind is master.
Start with the word Ayang. Ah, yeah, so there are more pronouns that weren't in the text. They disappeared. Ayang means this, actually. So we talked about that, right? The word da means that. So that man, that woman, or he, she, it's all da. Ayang comes from the word for this, which is ida. Ida becomes ayang. It's just one of the weird conjugations of ida, idang. I think, if I'm not totally out to lunch, I'll have to add that to the textbook because we didn't talk about this. So ayang means this. This dhamma desana. Desana means talk or speech. Own form, very complicated word. And dhamma. When you deal with compounds, you usually start at the end. And we'll talk about compounds way later in the course if we ever get to them. But the word at the end, the part at the end is usually the main word. So you're talking about a desana, a noun. Desana is a noun. It means a talk. So this talk about the dhamma. Or on the Dhamma. But this compound means Dhamma Desana means talk on the Dhamma or about the Dhamma. So we would try to translate this and then you'd look at the English translation. Where was this Dhamma teaching spoken? Ayang Dhamma Desana Kata Basitati. Kata means where. It's an indeclinable. Not exactly. It is, but it's already kind of a. Anyway, there's a. It's got. That's another thing I didn't talk about. This is why translations are good, because they remind me of stuff that we need to go over. That is like that. That means that. That means what? It's a question. So if you ask what man, it's go puriso. Not so puriso, it's go puriso. What man? Then there's a third form is yo. We call this the KYT system. And if I were really a good teacher, I would give you a whole class, a whole section on this. So hopefully one day the textbook will have a section on the KYT system. So the T is the ta, and you have the ya, and you have the ka. Ka is asking a question. So anytime you're asking a question, that's why you see kata. Ka means what, and ta is this ending that it refers to place. So kata means in what place, where. That's actually in the textbook. We should get to that later on. And ya means what, but it's not a question. It's relative. So which, like when you say in English, the, no, if you say in English, whatever man goes to the forest, say the other part of the sentence, whatever man goes to the forest gets robbed. Whatever person goes to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha for refuge, that person will never go to evil state. So ye keji buddhang saranang kathase. Ye means what? Plural, actually. Ye keji means whatever. It's a special form. Ye, yeah. Anyway. I'm sure that's terribly confusing, but just remember K is for questions. So this is Dhamma Desana. Here we have a feminine form. It shows us Desana is actually a feminine word. So this Dhamma Desana, Kata Bhasita. The subject of the sentence is the Dhamma Desana. This Dhamma Desana, Kata, and then Bhasita. Bhasita is an adjective modifying Dhamma Desana. So this kind of Dhamma Desana, what kind is it? It's a spoken Dhamma Desana. This is how you have to think of Pali. So this spoken Dhamma Desana we're talking about, that's how you understand this. That's why Bhasita is going to follow Dhamma Desana. If this was a Purisa, Ayang Puriso Kata Bhasito, he would say. Bhasita would then have to follow the masculine. Ayang Dhammo, if you just put Dhammo, right? This Dhamma, where was it spoken? Ayang Dhammo Kata Bhasito, it would have to be. And this is a little confusing because it has this little ti on the end. Don't worry, we don't. Well, it's confusing because it appears out of place, but ti is used instead of quotation marks. Pali doesn't have quotation marks, instead it has this little ti on the end, which actually makes it difficult sometimes to tell what is the quotation. But this whole sentence here, ayang dhamma desana kata bhasita, is actually a quotation. It's someone talking, someone questioning, someone asking a question. Someone's asking a question. Where was this Dhamma Desana taught? Spoken, right? And then you have the answer. Sawati. Sawatiyang. And they've dropped the T on the end. In the first one to show that this is a conversation. The first person asks, where was this Dhamma Desana spoken? Sawatiyang. The iyang, what the paradigms are for, because if you studied them, you'd recognize yang as a 7-1 form, 7-1 ending, locative. Sawati is a place, it's a town, a city. And yang means in. So here we have in Sawati, that's the answer to the question. Where was it spoken? In Sawati. Kang Arabha, again we have another question, so we have the ka, it's like tang, but tang would mean that. Here means what. And this is a really difficult question. What this means is, because kang here is the object, not the subject. The subject of this sentence is still the Dhamma Desana. So the way you translate this in Thai is you'd say again, this Dhamma Desana, so to translate this sentence, Kang Arabati, you would again repeat to yourself, this Dhamma Desana, Kang Araba. He on the end here is again a quotation. Ayang Dhammadesana Kang Araba. This Dhammadesana, having, actually, you say, Ayang Dhammadesana Savatthi Yang Basita. This Dhammadesana was spoken in Savatthi in regards to what? That's how you translate this, understand this sentence. But it's shortened here, as we always do in all languages, to say Kang Araba, which means in regards to, or referring to, Araba, referring to, or having referred to, literally, having referred to, and this is the object, what? What was it referring to? What was it in reference to? Why was it taught? Here we have, again, this one-word sentence. Technically, our teachers in Thailand would force us to translate this as Ayang Dhamma Desana Savatthiyang Basita Yakupala Terang Araba. So this Dhamma Desana was taught in Savatthi, was spoken in Savatthi, having making reference to or having made reference to Yakupala Thera. The ang on the end here is because this is actually a masculine noun, but it's the object, so the object takes ang ending. Yakupala Therang. Yakupala Thera is a compound made up of two words, Yakupala and Thera. Something you're gonna. Yes, this is where Theravada comes from. The Thera on the end is the main noun again, right? It starts always the end. So we're talking about a Thera, and here we have Chakupala, which means named. So we have Thera named Chakupala. So the Thera who was Chakupala. And this T is a reduplication, or a duplication, however you say it, and that's something like sandhi, which we're going to get into later. You often just double things. Compounds often have this doubling. Just double a letter. T's double, P's double. It's common. Yakupala was his name. Okay, that was, yeah.
Is there any easy way of recognizing when the TI is standing for quotation marks as compared to just part of the word?
All context. No, I mean, you're starting to realize how difficult it is to translate Pali. The other thing about the quotations, if you look here, as we go down, you're going to see that they've cheated and they put quotations for you. When I studied Sanskrit, I'll never forget our final exam. Our final exam was just, he made it really easy for us, actually. It was supposed to be much more difficult. But it was just a Sanskrit passage using Devanagari in Devanagari script. And all we had to do was translate it into English. And I got a bit through it, and suddenly I got stuck. I saw a T on the end. I saw this T sitting there, and I thought, what the heck? Because I couldn't find the beginning. I looked back, and I couldn't figure out. I was like, "There's." So I went up to the teacher. I said, "There's a mistake on. Is there a mistake on the exam?" And he looked at me and he said, "Give it that. I can't give that to you. Like, I can't tell you what's wrong there." And I went back, and I looked, and all it was is I hadn't gone back far enough to find the beginning of the quote. Because I had the ending there with the T, but couldn't find the beginning. But yeah, as you say, what you'll notice is a lot of verbs, T is the most common verbal ending. So you're going to often look at it and say, oh, that's a verb, but no, it's not. It makes it easier when you see here in the next paragraph, they've put all the quotes in for you. And that's common now in the version we're dealing with. It's all got quotations. Well, much of it is got the quotes and put them in for you. Okay, so those sentences were actually overly difficult. The next paragraph is the actual story, so it's much easier.
Would it be easier if we knew the words and knew their meanings and memorized them? And then we can recognize if they are quotations at the end.
Yeah, sure. I think that's over. Yeah, that's. I mean, there's a lot of things you'll recognize. If you look at Basitati, Ita is a giveaway because Ita is the Ita ending is common for adjectives or anything with a ta ending. common thing for adjectives because it's actually a formed from the root bas. Bas means in regards to speaking. Basita means that which is spoken. So basita, basati means to speak. He speaks, right? Basita. If you look up at the verse, look at the verb there in the second line, basita, basati. Basati wa karoti wa. Basati means he speaks. That's the root given a verbal declension. Verb. You take that root and you put ita on the end, you have that which is spoken. This is one of the really awesome or crazy, I don't know how you say it, it's one of the defining things about Pali is words can be taken apart and put together and related, and you find that they're all related in the end, and they all come back to these roots, or many of them come back to these roots. Basita is the same as basati. So basita is a giveaway, and that's why you know that this ti on the end is basitati. Quite clear from if you studied Pali that you know that that ti on the end is a doesn't belong there. No such thing as basitati. There couldn't be such a word. Well, clear that that's not a word. Studied lots of Pali. Okay, let's try and do the next paragraph. Just, you know, you don't have to retain a lot of this, but it's hopefully a little bit neat. Let's do at least one more sentence. This one will be easier. Sawatiyang, does anyone know what sawatiyang means?
The sawati.
But not just that, the town of Sawati. What does the word itself in whole mean? What's the yang ending? I already mentioned this.
Oh, you did.
You haven't learned this because you didn't, I don't think, go through the paradigms, but yang means in, the 7-1 form of the female, because Sawati is a feminine word. So Sawatiyang means in Sawati. Yeah, so in the suttas you often hear Deva me sutang ekang samayang bhagava sawatiyang viharati. At one time the Blessed One, I've heard thus, at one time the Blessed One was dwelling in Sawati. Very common thing to hear. So the Buddha lived in Sawati for many, many years, so you're going to see actually in part two, talks about how many years the Buddha stayed in Sawati, where he spent most of the majority of his life as a Buddha.
And Bhavana means blessed one.
Bhagava?
Oh, Bhagava, yes.
Bhagava means one who is lucky, or literally it's a strange word. Blessed might be good. But blessed, I think, is very, you know, interpretative. It's not exactly what the word means. I always thought Bhagava, and it may have some grain of truth to it. Bhagava was one who has a share. Bhaga. Bhagi. Bhaga. Bhaga means a share or a part. So Bhagava means someone who you have to give a part or a tithe or taxes to. So it was the Lord. And it was used for appropriate. But I haven't. That isn't what the dictionary says. So it may have just been my own speculation. I can't remember where I read that, but I read that Bhagava means Lord in the sense of having come from that would be Bhagava. If that was correct, it would be Bhagava, but it's Bhagava.
It is the first quality of the Buddha, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is Bhagava.
That's right. Sawatiyang is a 7-1 feminine noun ending in e. That shows me you've retained something. Taught you something. Sawatiyang. Now we don't translate from left to right. If you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see the way we translate. Go to the word by word on page 5. Don't look at this first paragraph. Look at the second, third paragraph. Sawati yang. You do translate sawati first. Sawati yang first in sawati. Kira, it is said. And then in English, you go straight to... That's not true, actually. I've put ahosi first because that's how I would translate it, translate it for smoothness. But normally you translate the noun first. So you translate... Let's go back up to page 4 at the top. Sawati ang kira mahasuvano nama kutumbiko. Normally you... Just that in English we always say there was someone, but... For Pali, you'd start with the noun. So let's start with the main noun here is kutumbiko. Kutumbiko, kutumbi means what? A rich man or a landowner, right? Someone who has land. Kutumbi. Someone who has land. Nama means named by name. Kutumbiko. Mahasuvano nama. This is how you translate this one. Mahasuvano nama is a way of telling you someone's name. You put the name first and you say nama. Bhagava doesn't literally mean happy. There's no etymological sense of that. Bhaga means luck, actually, or chance, or fortune. Fortunate one. Bhaga and wa is just the form of wanta. Wanta means one who has or one who is. So bhagavanta means one who is... The word is actually bhagavanta, a irregular form of the word. List of irregulars that you have to learn. Along with arahanta. Bhagavanta means one who... Vanta means one who is or has. So bhagavanta means one who has luck or fortune. Probably the... literal meaning of it. So anyway, Mahasuvano nama kutumbiko. So kutumbiko is the subject of the sentence. If you find something with an O on the ending, chances are that's your subject. Except here you've got two, Mahasuvano and kutumbiko. So you have to translate both words and figure out which one is going to be your chief. Chief here is kutumbiko, means that's our real subject. Mahasuvano is just telling you his name. So the landowner named Mahasuvano. Mahasuvano nama kutumbiko. This order is not always like this. Sometimes you'll have kutumbiko first. So you might say the landowner kutumbiko Mahasuvano nama. That's common. You have a kutumbiko named Mahasuvano. Ahosi just means he was. A regular form of the word hoti. Hoti means to be, or bhavati. It's a similar word. Hoti. Is ahosi means he was. So this is in the past tense sentence, as much of the Tipitaka is about things that happened in the past. So Mahasuvano nama kutumbiko ahosi. And this is a curious sentence, or this is a curious aspect of the Pali language, that after the verb... In an ordinary sentence, there's nothing after the verb. Problem is, ordinary sentences are not... Well, I guess they're still the most common, but many sentences are not regular. Normally, the verb ends the sentence. So in order to find the verb, you go straight to the end of the sentence. Now, the exception is when you want to talk more about the... Or there's one exception is... when you want to talk more about the subject of the sentence, which is what we want to do here. So there was this kutumbiko, but we're not finished talking about him, so we put all these adjectives after the verb. We've already said that he exists, but now we want to describe him a bit more. Common in Pali, you say, there was a kutumbiko named Mahasuvano, who was Ado Mahadano Mahabogo Aputako. Ado means what? Affluent? Rich. Mahadano means of great wealth. Maha means great. Dana means wealth. Mahabogo. Bogo is a property, I guess, is fairly literal. Then the last one is of interest to us. Aputako. A means without. Something. Can anyone guess what putako means? Didn't already look at the English? Maybe you can't because you don't know what putta. Putta means son. Putaka means someone who has a son. Aputaka means someone who doesn't have a son. Ka endings are often someone who has. Putaka means someone who has a son. Aputaka, someone who doesn't have a son. Aputako means referring to the subject of the sentence. It's important because he's going to go and do stuff that somehow he believes helps him get a son. People in Sri Lanka today even believe that the things that he does will get you a son. Right? Sangha, some people go to the Bodhi tree and pour water on the Bodhi tree thinking they're going to get a son from it.
Yeah, that's one thing.
I don't believe you.
Well, nobody has done a research yet, but it seems to work.
You believe it?
Well, I don't have any means to disprove it, so...
Wait a bit.
Works for some. I mean, mostly it is...
You don't need a reason to disprove it. You need some evidence that it works. So it's actually that big of a thing that people actually show that it works. But there's something to it. You know, there could be lots of angels around the Bodhi tree, and when they see a nice couple, then they think, oh, I'd like to be born there, and then it happens like that. Interesting.
Yeah, actually, this is for curing illnesses.
Yeah, that I'm not sure about.
Just don't ask for nutty cakes. Gotcha.
Okay, so I think we're going to stop there. No? But that wasn't, you weren't meant to translate that, obviously. That was just me showing you some real life example working towards.
On page 5, it makes it a lot easier to know what the words means.
Yeah. So the way you'd use this is you'd start with the Pali and you'd try to translate it, and then you'd look at the English to figure out what the meaning of the sentence was. And then if you still couldn't get it, you'd scroll down to the word by word and figure out which word means what.
Yes, I think that's helpful.
In Thailand, you'll have an exam and they'll give you a paragraph like this first big paragraph here. And they will tell you to translate it in one of the two ways. So they give you two parts. One part is to translate word by word, and the other is to do a full translation. So if you look, I've done both here. Under the part that says translation, that would be one part of the exam. Part that says word by word, that would be the other part of the exam. They give you two different paragraphs. One paragraph you translate directly, and the other you translate word by word.
I remember this first from the Dhammapada story, the first one.
This is indeed the first story. So, I think there was learning that went on today, no?
Yes, definitely. Even though, you know, it seems like there's a lot, I mean, we have to remember, we learned English. And that makes no sense.
Yeah, that's one thing I can say about Pali. It makes a lot more sense than some languages.
Yeah, I think with a little exposure, this is going to be doable.
Yeah, but I can't stress enough that you do have to, if you want to really get it, learning the paradigms. Learning the paradigms is an artificial way of jumping ahead. Obviously, the way people learn languages naturally isn't by studying paradigms, but as a non-native speaker, you'll save yourself a lot of headaches. You know, you don't have to take the years it takes someone to learn something naturally if you do the grammar work. It's a very structured language, so you're just going to be lost otherwise. If you come across a word and you don't know the endings, as you can see, sawatiyang, it's easy, I can see it right away, but if you didn't study the paradigms, you know, you can't get that from the paradigm we studied, puriso, because it's a whole different paradigm. So you have to study the feminine paradigms as well. The irregular paradigms are not that important because they often follow the masculine or feminine, mostly the masculine paradigms, but there are quite a few of them that are irregular. The 1-1 form is the most common irregular, I think. Like Bhagawa is totally irregular because it comes from Bhagavanta. It should be Bhagavanto by all reasoning, but it's not. It's shortened to Bhagava. Bhagava isn't a long A ending, it's a anta ending. A wanta. Anyway, that's all for today. Thank you all for coming, and we'll try to do this again next week. Shouldn't be much problem. I'm not expected to be busy again. So we'll try to do this all again next week.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, thanks everyone for sticking with it, coming out. Have a good day.
You too. See y'all next week.
You too. Thank you.